Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Today, it's Wall Street's problem, and Hank Paulson's at Treasury and much of the world's. Tomorrow, or very soon, the financial crisis sweeping the globe and its impact will be in the lap of a President McCain or a President Obama. What will they do? Today, we ask top economists who advise each. McCain's John Taylor of Stanford, Obama's Lawrence Summer of Harvard. This hour, On Point, the economists who speak to the candidates, Taylor, Summers, McCain, Obama, and the future of the American economy. You can join the conversation. What do you want? What do you expect from McCain, Obama, and those who advise them on the economy? Who do you trust to steer out of this crisis? We will be joined in a few minutes by former U.S. Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton, Lawrence Summers, who's been on the phone in just the last few days with Barack Obama. Joining me first is John Taylor, who is on the road today in Green Bay, Wisconsin, with his candidate, John McCain. John Taylor served George W. Bush and George H.W. Bush as Undersecretary of the Treasury for International Affairs for George W. and as a member of Bush Senior's Council of Economic Advisors. He's a professor of economics at Stanford University and a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. Now he's a top economic advisor to Senator John McCain. He joins us from Green Bay. John Taylor, welcome to On Point.
Good to be here, Tom.
In retrospect, who, when should the problems behind this crisis we're in the midst of have been addressed, Mr. Taylor, Professor Taylor, and how?
Well, they should be being addressed right now. And the plans to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again should also be put forth. And that's what Senator McCain is doing now. He's focusing first on one of the most glaring errors, and that was the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, really a government failure, if you like, which were allowed to grow way too big. Many people argued against it. He argued strongly against it. And that's kind of symbolic of the excesses that we have experienced, which have led to the problems we're in now.
So many ways to approach this. Let me just ask it this way. You're close to John McCain. You're advising him on the economy. He's at the head of the Republican ticket. Why should voters trust the party that drove deregulation to fix the mess that many are now saying it has created?
The problems here are of going back many years, and they involve both parties. And if you think about, these huge housing organizations, government-sponsored organizations, enterprises, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, those were created by government, and they have been allowed to grow too much. There's been influence peddling in the Congress. The administration has argued strongly, actually many administrations have argued strongly, to shrink those institutions. So when you think about how to fix the problem, you have to say this has been across the board in terms of irresponsibility. And the best thing is to have someone, it seems to me, like John McCain, who's reached across the aisle, who knows how to deal with the other side, who's shown a record to stop excesses, actually, things like vetoing earmarks and being against anything that is going to be excessive in terms of government. That's the thing that people should be focusing on right now.
You've mentioned Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac a couple of times, but of course in the last few days what has really had people's attention has been private company, AIG, private company, Lehman Brothers. Of course, there was Bear Stearns before that, and Wall Street is seen as having driven an awful lot of what we're in the ugly grips of right now. Was John McCain wrong in the late 90s to support legislation that pushed deregulation, that brought investment banks into the turf that Glass-Steagall had normally kept reserved for commercial banks? Was that a mistake in retrospect? Did John McCain and others like him, he voted for that. I guess Joe Biden voted against. Obama wasn't in the Senate yet. But was he wrong to push in that so hard, so far in that direction?
No, in fact, the problem here is not an insufficient amount of regulation. The problem is ineffective regulation. The most heavily regulated entities in our economy have had the most difficulty. Some of these commercial banks, very heavily regulated. And think about Citi, for example. But at the same time, these banks had off-balance sheet operations that the regulators were either allowing or ignored or didn't know about. So it's not a matter of not having enough. It's a matter of making sure it's effective and that people are accountable and responsible. And that's what John McCain is focusing on right now, to make it more effective, to bring together the wide number of agencies that are responsible so they can be focused on really getting this job done, which is essential. Accountability, transparency, effectiveness is what we need right now.
But there are fundamental structural questions here, aren't there? I mean, Phil Graham, who was John McCain's top economic advisor, was co-chair of his campaign, sponsored that legislation in 98 in the Senate that brought that wall down. That's not just about effectiveness. That's about a fundamental dividing line. Now, Phil Graham's gone since he said Americans were whiners and so on. But, I mean, he was John McCain's main man, his main economic advisor, the same guy pushing that much deregulation. Can you push the wall aside that definitively, structurally, sure. Still have effective oversight?
First of all, John McCain has many good economic advisors. He's been meeting with people since the start of this campaign on these issues. But I think in terms of the specifics of your question, think about Bear Stearns. That was an investment bank. That's the first one that really got into the difficulties. That was not something that was merged together or mixed together with a commercial bank, that the kind of things that you're focusing on. So that really does nothing to do with legislation such as you're referring to. That was a pure investment bank and got into trouble.
John Taylor, we have questions for you from our listeners. Matt from Somerville, Massachusetts, you're on the air with John McCain, economic advisor. John Taylor.
Hello. I've heard Senator McCain refer recently in the last couple of days to the problem being greed. And this, I was troubled by this because it reminds me of the war on terror. I feel like governmental war on human emotions is going to be ineffective, and there will always be greed, that there will always be malefic forces inside of people. Really, the role is to vigorously enforce regulation and create regulations that will punish bad action. And I don't see in Senator McCain's voting record any evidence that he's inclined to do the kind of vigorous regulation that would be necessary to rein in greed, because greed will always be with us.
Matt, thanks very much. John Taylor, the Wall Street Journal editorial page, kind of shocked to hear John McCain complaining about greed. They say that's not the way to go, Senator. Matt says, it's sort of like evil. It's hard to legislate it, but let's have clear regulation.
Well, let me say that's a good question, but, Senator McCain is very specific. What he complained about was unbridled greed. Corruption, reckless conduct, unbridled greed. And so the point here is obviously there's going to be greed forever, but it has to be contained through, I would say, accountability, transparency. If people make mistakes, they should suffer from those mistakes, just like they benefit from the good decisions. And Senator McCain has been clear in his record on this and clear in all his statements. And you can go back and see exactly, this is exactly the kind of thing that we need to focus on now to make sure this mess doesn't happen in the future. You can go down the line and see the examples where, because of lack of transparency, lack of accountability, that this has been an unbridled set of emotions, and that's the thing we need to work on in terms of improving government regulation.
John McCain's been in the Senate for a long time. George Bush has been in the White House for nearly 8 years. How much of George Bush's economic policy would John McCain follow? What would he change, if anything?
Well, he's changing. His proposal is to change a tremendous amount to get this economy moving again and create jobs. His program is called Jobs for America. He wants to, for example, make sure that American firms are not penalized from doing business in the United States compared to other countries by reducing the tax rate that they are paying. It's the second highest in the world. That's the kind of thing that's so different. He has a health care plan, a tax credit, $5,000 per family, $2,500 per individual, which will be a tax credit to help insurance, get the cost of insurance down. That is much different. He wants to double the exemption for families with children so they don't have to pay so much tax, reduce their taxes in that way. And then I think most important, I could go down the list, go on and on, we've had a spending binge in the United States, and John McCain is no better record than anybody on that to control that spending. And that's what we need to do. And I've been out on the road with him and perhaps the most effective and appreciated statement is that we need to get government spending under control. So there's a long list of differences, and that's what people should be focusing
on. But a spending binge that came with the Republican in the White House, and for most of that time, Republicans in charge in Congress. Let me ask you this, John Taylor. These bailouts that we're in the middle of right now are incredibly expensive, and they are unplanned. So has Senator McCain changed at all his plans on tax cuts? Can you lay out these big bailouts and still have the tax cuts that he's been promoting, the Bush tax cuts extended and more?
Well, you need to have tax cuts to focus on creating jobs and get America going. And I'd say here the contrast with Senator Obama is stark. Senator Obama wants to raise tax rates on people, small businesses, other kinds of businesses, dividends, capital gains. I can't think of a worse thing to be doing in tough economic times. It's like completely backwards in terms of economic policy. So Senator McCain wants to make sure the economy grows. He has a detailed plan to balance the budget by the end of his first term. It requires discipline to keep spending growth from being too rapid, and it, of course, builds on the fact that the economy will expand again if we take the right policies.
President Bush said that, but the economy is in trouble and our deficit has just grown. Doesn't it just grow again with what you're describing?
Well, what I'm describing is based on really conservative forecasts of agencies like the Congressional Budget Office. It's based on economic projections that are reasonable. And again, the key here is making sure that we control the spending binge. And I think going back to your original question about Republicans, Democrats, Independents, John McCain has such a good record on controlling spending.
Again, John McCain, Republican. Professor Taylor, please stand by. When we come back, we'll be joined by Lawrence Summers, who advises Obama. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about McCain, Obama, and the economy in crisis with two of their prominent economic advisors. For McCain, Stanford economist who served under Bush Sr. and Jr., John Taylor. For Obama, former Secretary of the Treasury under Bill Clinton, former Harvard President Lawrence Summers, who joins us in a moment. President Bush speaking this morning on the economy, and we'll listen in on that. John Taylor has been with us from Green Bay, Wisconsin, where John McCain is today. Right now we're joined as well from Washington by Lawrence Summers. Served as Secretary of the Treasury under Bill Clinton from 1999 to 2001, Chief Economist of the World Bank, 91 to 93, President of Harvard University from 01 to 06. Larry Summers, thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be with you.
John Taylor says the heart of John McCain's message is simple, and it's this: control spending and cut taxes to spur job creation, create jobs. John McCain's the man to lead us out of this crisis. What do you say?
Oh, look, I think this election presents a stark choice, a choice between more of the economic strategy of this decade, which used exactly the same slogans for a very different reality, and the economic strategy of the 1990s. When we created 23 million jobs and when family incomes rose rather than fell over the course of this decade. It's a very stark choice. Sure, we'd all like to have lower taxes. I was surprised to hear Professor Taylor, who is a friend, assert that John McCain had a detailed plan to balance the budget by 2013. There's no outside observer who has shared that judgment, and the judgment of outside observers has been that his plan would exacerbate the budget deficit by literally trillions of dollars over the last decade. Yes, John McCain has fought earmarks. If we eliminated every earmark that John McCain talks about, it would pay for less than 5% of the tax cut that he proposes to target to a very small part of the population. I think Senator Obama has the right kind of balanced economic strategy. It's a strategy that focuses on stimulating the economy to lift us out of the current financial crisis. It's a strategy that focuses, as Senator Obama has focused for years, on the need for stronger regulation to prevent these financial crises. You never saw Senator Obama saying deregulate, deregulate, deregulate. You never saw the Democratic Party hold ceremonies where people took out saws and chopped regulatory, chopped books containing regulation. It's a strategy on Senator Obama's part that recognizes that a misfunctioning health system is doing enormous damage to the competitiveness of American companies. It's a strategy that recognizes that we can't afford more Katrinas, more bridge collapses in Minneapolis, need to make necessary public investments. It's a strategy that recognizes the reality of the current economy, but it's based on the principles that led to strong economic performance during the 1990s, the principles that led to strong economic performance during the 1960s, and it rejects an approach that's been pursued over this last decade that will, when the statistics are in all likelihood, be the worst decade of American economic performance since the Great Depression.
Larry Summers, hold the thought. John Taylor, I know I've just got you for a few more minutes. There's the Taylor, maybe, I mean, the Summers, maybe Summers slash Obama critique. What do you say?
Well, first of all, just going back to economic reality, raising taxes on anyone, raising taxes on dividends, capital gains, on small businesses, at this state, in this week of economy, is just a terrible mistake. And that's what Senator Obama is featuring.
John, that's just not the truth.
It is true.
John, it's not. John, it's not.
Taxes on dividends, and he raised to raise taxes on capital gains. He wants to raise taxes on small business. It's true. There's no question about it. You're part of the plan. He also, and I gave you a lot of time to talk about it, Larry, but just let me mention that Senator McCain has a plan for health care, which involves tax credits for individuals, $5,000. He's also stood up very strongly against the excesses of improper regulation on Fannie and Freddie. He's out there in front of everybody, voted for it. He's been out in front in terms of getting oil prices down by increasing the supply of oil. And he does have a very strong record on spending. You might ridicule the fact that he has never accepted an earmark for himself, and you might ridicule that it's small potatoes, but it is huge out there, and that's where we have to start. He's going to veto legislation that causes excessive spending. So let's,
John, as economists,
it's most appropriate.
John, as economists, we owe the listeners honesty. I admire what Senator McCain has done on earmarks. Am I wrong in saying that earmarks represent on the order of 5% of the magnitude of the tax cuts that he is advocating?
You're wrong to say that that's the only thing he has to do to control spending. corporate loopholes, on now that we're able to successfully bring home our troops from Iraq with victory, he's able to spend much less there, $135 billion right there in terms of 2013 at least.
John, are you prepared?
So
are you prepared to make
things? And you can look through the budget. It's a matter of getting revenues to grow a little over 5%, holding spending control to 2.5%. It's very doable. It's laid out. And
Professor
John,
Summers, I've just got John Taylor for a couple more minutes. I want to put this to him if I may before he goes. Professor Taylor. John McCain said this week, I just want to get your clarification. So he said on Monday, the fundamentals of our economy are strong. He said on Tuesday, the American economy is in a crisis. Is there a contradiction? Is there a problem? What should we take from that?
Well, let me say, I've been on the road with Senator McCain throughout the summer. Every stop, he mentions how tough economic times are and that we need to have a program to create jobs. He also wants to make sure to people that we can do this. America is strong, and it has the ability to get back to where it is in terms of strong economic growth. So, yes, you want to stress the potential in the United States, the fact that we can do this, but recognize the economic times are tough, and that's what he's been stressing at every stop I've been with him.
Larry Summers, one more question, then we have to let Professor Taylor go.
John, we're both advocates for the candidates we believe would best be president. Are you prepared to make available a detailed budget documenting your claim that Senator McCain will balance the budget with 2013 for external scrutiny and to show where the cuts are from. You made that claim in a very strong and direct way. Is that something you're prepared to make available for external scrutiny?
The information's already been made available to the Tax Policy Center.
And what was the Tax Policy Center's conclusion, John? Its conclusion was that there would be trillions of dollars of extra deficits in Senator McCain's plan relative to Senator Obama's plan was the conclusion of the Tax Policy Center. Trillions of dollars of debt.
I don't think they included anything on spending. They included nothing on spending on this. And so I'd say the information is there. You're welcome to go look at it. But their interpretation where you just don't include any spending control is completely off.
John, I am sorry that you are speaking in this way, and I make the challenge. The Tax Policy Center has laid out $3.4 trillion of extra deficits from Senator McCain's plan. Show us the spending cuts.
He's already been supplied. I mentioned some of them to you already, Larry. They're out there, and
we will let observers more objective than you and I make that judgment. I think there'll be very few who agree with you.
John Taylor in Green Bay.
Very few to agree with what yours is going to balance too, Larry. So let's leave it at that.
There it goes. John Taylor in Green Bay today with John McCain, a professor at Stanford University, fellow at the Hoover Institution, worked under George W. and George H.W. Bush. Professor Taylor, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Let's take a call from Worcester, Vermont, and Jim. Jim, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
You know, all of these, in all due deference, all of this debate can make your head spin. And a previous caller referred to an ingrained tendency toward greed, and human beings also have a tendency towards an impulse to share. And if there's any regulatory help that's going to be really helpful, that's going to be what's encouraged, rather than allowing endless exotic financial instruments to take hold and people in power who apparently know something about them to be in control. And so I'm just sharing my viewpoint.
Jim, thank you very much for that. Larry Summers, if I may, we put John Taylor's feet to the fire earlier about some of the deregulation that went on. Of course, some of the most significant deregulation went on in the 1990s. 1999, the same year you became Treasury Secretary, your mentor and predecessor, Robert Rubin, helped secure passage of that bill that Phil Gramm sponsored. So, I mean, do Republicans and Democrats share equally in, if we look back at the track record, in blame for the mess we appear to be in now with such disarray on Wall Street?
I don't think that's a plausible view. If you look at that bill, what it did was it repealed a variety of provisions in the law that had largely faded away because of regulatory actions, and it permitted some very important developments. Think, for example, of the merger from Bank of America and Merrill Lynch, which is one of the few bright spots in containing our current crisis. That would have been impossible without that legislation. What's unfortunate is that, as we recognized at the end of the Clinton administration when that passed, that legislation and our changing financial landscape required a very new regulatory apparatus. We made a variety of specific suggestions, including curbs on predatory loans, which at that time the Republican Congress would not adopt. We left office, and instead of focusing on a new regulatory framework, the focus shifted to an idea of competitiveness, that we should just reduce regulations on banks and investment banks, that we should remove restrictions, that we should actually push Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to buy subprime mortgages so that market could grow faster. And we're now reaping the results of that approach. I think there's been a very clear difference in philosophy between the two political parties for a very long time. It's a difference between believing that the financial system should work primarily for the benefit of financial companies and taking their perspective on it, and a belief in that the financial system should work for the families, the households, the businesses that that depend on it. If you looked, for example, at the bill you referred to, thanks to President Clinton's insistence and over Senator Graham's objection, that bill included substantial provision for extra lending to support community development. It included new protections for privacy. All of that was opposed by many in the financial industry and by those who were advising Senator McCain at this point. And so I think there's a very clear difference between the two parties on this issue, and it goes through a whole range of regulatory issues.
And yet the investment banks came thundering in, and now we see them tumbling down. Let's take a call from New Canaan, Connecticut. Matt, you're on the air with Lawrence Summers.
Yes, hi. Thanks for the call. Listen, it's fascinating to listen to the advocacy going on. There's definitely a need to have these larger macro discussions from the political perspective. I thought maybe I could lend some insight a little bit on what's going on in Wall Street itself. And as a hedge fund manager and someone in the financial markets, I thought maybe my perspective might lead to some discussion.
Yeah.
The point I'm trying to make is I think what I find interesting, and there definitely, in my opinion, is, and it does, it comes from a certain temperament. I'm an oddity in New York. I'm a Democrat and a pro-Obama hedge fund manager.
Okay.
I find what is very difficult to talk about the Knickerbocker at the Racquet Club is, why is it that hedge funds have to have 30 or 40% returns to get clients and get accredited investors to be satisfied? And I think because of a certain irrationality among the community of money managers or private equity managers or investment banks, this need to get exorbitant returns for our clients who we are ultimately beholden to.
Isn't that capitalism? I mean, that's what it's about, is getting the highest
it
return
is
people.
Capitalism, but there is a point where capitalism becomes irrational, just like markets become irrational. And there comes a point where psychology has to act more maturely. And I don't know if any party can legislate maturity or responsibility among not just Manhattan or Los Angeles or Boston or Chicago, but among a population of many different economic backgrounds.
If you tell your clients they're going to get a 10 or 12% return, are you out of business, Matt?
Absolutely. I cannot tell a client, look, let's do something reasonable with a 1031 exchange. Let's do something reasonable with real estate and get safe, secure 10 to 15% returns annually.
Let me put that to Larry Summers. Larry Summers, there he is, hedge fund manager from, you know, the heart of it. And you hear his concern, perspective. Do we have to like get over those big returns, or isn't that just part of the range of returns and the expectations of a fully functioning capitalist? Is it out of control? That's what Matt's suggesting.
I can't predict what returns will be. I think it's always a good idea for people to listen to claims of those in the investment community with a certain skepticism. You know, markets ultimately are about people, and people are very substantially driven by both greed and fear, and I suspect that's not going to change. And that's why I think the crucial issues for public policy involve how are you going to channel that greed and fear? How are you going to contain those tidal waves? How are you going to establish the incentives that are going to cause all of that to work in constructive ways rather than destructive ways. And from my perspective, the two parties and the two candidates in this election have very different philosophies on that question. Both believe in the power of market forces, but Senator Obama comes out of a tradition that believes if there aren't rules, people will take chances. People will endanger other people. Senator McCain thinks that rules are a burden, that companies don't like them. And until great duress like the recent moment, he, like those in his party, like President Bush, have consistently opposed rules.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about McCain, Obama, and the economy in crisis. We've been speaking with two of their prominent economic advisors. We heard for McCain from Stanford economist who served under Bush Sr. and Jr., John Taylor of Stanford. And remaining with us now for Obama, former Secretary of the Treasury, former Harvard president, Lawrence Summers. President Bush held a very brief press conference this morning at the White House. He spoke for only about 2 minutes, didn't take any questions. He said Americans should maintain confidence in the federal government's actions during these hard times.
Our financial markets continue to deal with serious challenges. As our recent actions demonstrate, my administration is focused on meeting these challenges. The American people can be sure we will continue to act to strengthen and stabilize our financial markets and improve investor confidence.
President Bush, in a very brief appearance this morning, Lawrence Summers is with us. He was Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton. Larry Summers, what about the steps that your successor, Hank Paulson, Henry Paulson, has taken so far in addressing the crisis we're in the midst of? Do you anticipate an Obama administration, Treasury Secretary, would have done the same, would do more of the same?
It is very difficult to judge specific steps from the outside, and battlefield medicine is never perfect, and so it's very difficult to make judgments. I would have to say, though, that I would hope that an Obama administration, if it ever faced anything as serious as this, would be much more effectively proactive than policymakers have been over the last year. Proactive in stimulating the economy so that at least we had a certain amount of economic strength that didn't exacerbate the financial difficulties, and so people were protected with substantial fiscal stimulus much more rapidly than the administration proposed. Proactive in an area where the administration dragged its heels, responding to the housing crisis, creating facilities that enabled homeowners to be protected, get write-downs of their homes, and if necessary, use the bankruptcy law to assure that they could get mortgage reduction and stay in their homes. Proactive in recognizing problems when they exist and not denying, for example, that Fannie and Freddie were in an impossible financial situation up until the very week when a bailout was deemed necessary. Proactive in establishing a framework for addressing failed financial institutions so that it was possible to resolve a financial institution that got itself in trouble without the kind of swirling chaos that and enormously costly chaos that has followed what's happened at Lehman. So it's extremely difficult and very difficult to make precise judgments because one doesn't know the information that the authorities have. But in general, it seems to me that it's the essence of prudent financial policy to try always to be ahead of the curve, to be preventive rather than being purely reactive. Mm. And I think if you listen to what Senator Obama has said, he sent a warning letter about subprime 16 months ago to Secretary Paulson. He called for important action on homeowners when the administration was still saying that the fundamentals of the economy were terrific 9 months ago. He's been urging for several months additional fiscal stimulus to move the economy. I think you'd see a strategy that was more pragmatic and a strategy that was more aggressively active about preventing problems, and above all, a strategy that was more focused on the needs of the vast majority of families rather than particular concerns within the Wall Street community.
Let's take a call from Washington, D.C. And Dave. Dave, you're on the air with Lawrence Summers.
Hello. I had a few quick comments. One was that Lawrence had mentioned, rightly so, that there's a lack of accountability in terms of numbers on the Republican side. But there's a similar lack of detailed numbers on the Democrat side that show that that would reduce the deficit as well. I was wondering if I could get his comments on that. And secondly, either one of them would have to work closely with Congress to prevent factionalization to actually pass any relevant measures. Considering Obama's lack of, considering the lack of experience that came across, or lack of support, unconditional support that came across during the primaries in the Democratic Party, do you think that will impact his presidency, considering how fractionalized Congress itself is?
Dave, great questions. Larry Summers, first on numbers and the deficit, how much would it grow under Obama? You put some numbers out there for, earlier on McCain. And then to this point, I mean, not everybody liked the centrist Democratic approach of the 90s. We had Robert Kuttner on just yesterday talking about how we need a new deal. That was not exactly the 90s when you were there. First, the numbers. Second, Obama and a Democratic Congress, if that's what it might be. Would he be in a position to lead in the direction you would advise?
These are good questions. As for Senator Obama, he's laid out his plan very clearly. Objective experts, the editorial pages of major newspapers, the tax policy center that Professor Taylor referred to have evaluated those plans. I don't think there's anyone who is asserting that Senator Obama's plan would balloon the deficit in a major way. How much deficit reduction might result, there are people who argue different sides. But there is no credible suggestion that it would balloon the deficit.
But he's talking about major infrastructure investments, talking about big changes to the health care
system. Correct.
These are expensive.
That's correct, Tom. And he's talking about repealing President Bush's tax cuts, which channel well over $100 billion a year to the top 1% of the population. The core difference is that Senator Obama is repealing the huge Bush tax cuts. Senator McCain is more than doubling them down with nearly tripling their size with further tax cuts targeted at the same group. That's why Senator McCain's program is going to run the national debt up, run our dependence on foreign capital up so much more than Senator Obama's plan is.
John Taylor says, you know, tax cuts mean growth, job growth, economic growth. Let the taxes grow and you're going to see growth go down.
Look, again, it's a perfectly fair question. In the midst of the recession, Senator Obama's made clear that the right thing to do is to stimulate the economy. Beyond that, you have to recognize that running huge deficits isn't isn't cutting taxes. It's simply postponing taxes and actually growing the taxes, because then you have to pay the interest as well. We've had a test of this. In 1993, Professor Taylor, virtually every one of Senator McCain's other economic advisors, declared with certainty that President Clinton's program would do enormous damage to the economy. What followed was the best 6 years of economic performance in the last generation, as the deficit came down and as 23 million jobs were created. Here they go again. Look, it's not a thing where a sensible person says taxes don't have any effect on behavior, but is it really a serious suggestion that raising taxes to the point where they will still be lower than they were when President Clinton was in office, still be lower than they were for most of President Reagan's term, that that's somehow going to do grievous damage to the economy? Or put the question in a different way. If the philosophy that trickle-down tax cuts worked was the right judgment at this point for our economy, why have we had the only economic expansion in the last 60 years when family incomes went down? Why is this decade, with policies set by President Bush, why has this been the weakest decade of economic performance? Why did Senator McCain, when he was in the Senate in 2001 through 2003, say that we couldn't afford the Bush tax cuts, a position that, in the context of this campaign, he has changed. Look, there are different views about what's best about energy. There are different views about what's best about health care, and I obviously support Senator Obama's. But on this question of taxes and budgets, it is a question of integrity. It is the choice is very clear, no matter how many times they try to deny it. Is it a good commitment of several trillion dollars of our national resources financed by debt to the very top of the population? Is that the right budget strategy? Those who think it is should support Senator McCain. But those who believe we shouldn't make the deficit worse, those who believe we need to be investing in repairing our infrastructure, those who believe we need to be investing in education and health care, that's the philosophy that Senator Obama brings. And it is a very stark and clear choice. And people will disagree with Senator Obama on it. People will disagree with me on it, and that's fine. But what I think is terribly important is that these choices be laid out in clear ways. That's why the suggestion that Senator McCain is going to balance the budget in 2013, when no one believes that as a consequence of his economic plan. That's why, you know, every independent organization has identified the ads suggesting that Senator Obama is going to raise taxes on middle-class families as dishonest. What Professor Taylor didn't tell you was that we all, not all of us, but most of you, me, I suspect most of your listeners, Tom, get their health insurance through their employer. And we don't think anything of it. John McCain proposes that somebody's going to make a calculation of what that health insurance is worth, add it to your income, and tax you on every penny of it. And as healthcare costs go up, those taxes are going to
up as well.
Go up. So in that sense, his proposal is actually a tax increase down the road for the middle class, while at the same time, you know, he talks about this era of greed all of a sudden. If there's an era of greed, why are we giving $2 trillion in new tax breaks to major corporations?
Larry Summers, question, comment for you from Boston. Dick, you're on the air with Lawrence Summers.
Hi, Tom. I basically am, as an economist and someone who studies the financial markets as part of my job, I'm sort of saddened by the course of the conversation throughout the day. Fundamentally, you know, there were lots of deregulation issues, lots of financial instruments, exotic financial instruments that were created.
Yep.
And here we are today bailing out the derivatives, where if from day one we would have had some decent leadership at the top, we could have bailed out the fundamentals for a lot less money.
Like who? When? Who and when, Dick?
The people that were basically at risk for being foreclosed. We allowed asset prices to fall. We've mispriced risk throughout the entire financial system.
But are you pointing to the managers of those investment banks and commercial banks or to government regulators?
No, I'm talking about the mortgages and the assets that were at risk at the fundamental. This whole thing started because of a decline in housing prices and an increase in foreclosures. And the handwriting was on the wall. Well, we had CDOs and CDOs squared and CDOs cubed, layer upon layer upon layer of derivatives. And what we've been doing systematically over the last 16 months is focusing on the crisis in these derivative markets. And what's happened is we've had spillovers into every other aspect of debt financing. Yes, the world is too heavily leveraged. Yes, there's too much debt.
Yep.
Yes, there's too much debt independence. But the fundamentals are what started this crisis. And now what we've done is, because we're bailing out the derivatives, Nobody knows what the asset prices are. That's why we had to bail out AIG.
Right. We've got Larry Summers to respond. Professor Summers?
It's a very thoughtful comment, and it's actually the reason that Senator Obama wrote Chairman Bernanke and Secretary Paulson 18 months ago in March of 2007 to warn about what was happening in not the derivatives markets, but in the housing markets, which are so central for families. That's why he was a strong advocate for the legislation, which the administration basically stonewalled for months, that had the effect of preventing of trying to reduce foreclosures and enabling negotiated reductions in mortgage delinquencies.
John McCain.
So I agree with you.
We just got a minute. What about the fundamentals? John McCain says, you know, we got a crisis, but the fundamentals are strong. You've been quoted this week saying the situation isn't something we can ride out with the hope that somehow, in a deep sense, the fundamentals are strong. Are the fundamentals not strong? We've got half a minute.
America's got great workers. America's got great technology, but the economy's in a rut. We need a very different set of policies from those that drove it into the rut to drive it out. When it's driven out of the rut, the American people, the American engine of prosperity, is a very strong one. But make no mistake, it needs to be driven in a very different way with very different policies.
Lawrence Summers, thank you very much for being with us this hour from Washington. Thank you for joining us. Lawrence Summers, former Secretary of the Treasury under Bill Clinton, 1999 to 2001, Chief Economist of the World Bank, 1991 to 1993, President of Harvard University from 2001 to 2006, and on the phone last weekend with Barack Obama. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.